Hello, welcome to Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury on Sun Sounds of Arizona. Every week, I read from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. I have a must list for us, and they don't have any reviews, but they have two really good long articles, which are going to be the focus this time. And if there's anything left over, I'm sure I can sneak in a few other stories. But here's our must list: The Naked Gun, Twisted Metal Season 2, and Cynthia Erivo as Jesus top this week's must list. Netflix's My Oxford Year adaptation and Katie Kitamura's novel Audition round out our picks for the weekend. This is by the Entertainment Weekly staff. You're out. Make it work. Fierce. Even Dinner with the Kushners. Few reality shows have given us as many catchphrases as Project Runway has over the last 20 years. And this week, we celebrate the premiere of season 21 with a cover featuring judges Heidi Klum, Nina Garcia, and La Roach, touching on Heidi's return after 8 years, the legacy of the new series, and what to expect from the quote-unquote spicy new cast. As someone who even pirated the international versions through BitTorrent back in the day, this one was a pinch-me moment to work on. That's Patrick Gomez, editor-in-chief. Our first item on our list is The Naked Gun. Who couldn't use some laughs right now? Luckily, Naked Gun is loaded with them. The spoof comedy franchise reboot stars Liam Neeson as Frank Drebin Jr., son of the character made famous by Leslie Nielsen, and Pamela Anderson as Beth Davenport, who falls in love with Frank as he investigates her brother's murder. Expect classic police squad shenanigans, a plethora of puns, sight gags galore, and an abundance of absurdity. As we enter the dog days of summer, cool off in an air-conditioned theater and crack up with Neeson and company. Twisted Metal is next. The gruesome Peacock comedy series, based on the PlayStation game, returns for an engine-revving bloody good time as Anthony Mackie's John Doe and Stephanie Beatrice's Quiet enter the titular demolition derby put on by mysterious host Calypso, played by Anthony Carrigan in season 2. My Oxford Year. Julia Whelan's stunning novel gets adapted into a fantastic weepy with this tale of American grad student Anna, played by Sophia Carson, and her hunky Oxford professor Jamie, played by Corey Milchreist. I don't know what's more beautiful, their love or the beautiful Oxford vistas. Jesus Christ Superstar. We've seen Cynthia Erivo defy gravity. Now she's ascending to musical theater messiah status as Jesus Christ. Get to the Hollywood Bowl in Los Angeles this weekend only to see Erivo's Gethsemane, Adam Lambert's Judas, and Philippa Sue's Mary, or heaven help you. Audition is our last item on the list. Beach Reads Not Your Thing. Dive into Katie Kitamura's bonkers fifth novel, recently longlisted for the Booker Prize. Sarah Jessica Parker was a judge. The Lynchian tale follows a seasoned actress who takes method to another level, leaving you to wonder what is real. That's our must list this week: The Naked Gun, Twisted Metal Season 2, and Cynthia Erivo as Jesus top this week's must list, and it was by the Entertainment Weekly staff. They don't have a review of Naked Gun, but my first long article is something that was a cover story for them a week or two ago. It's all about The Naked Gun, Law and Disorder. The Naked Gun's Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson on unloading the silly for their reboot. The stars, director Akiva Schaffer, producers Seth MacFarlane and Erica Huggins, and more preview their new entry in the iconic spoof comedy franchise. This is by Jared Hall. Can I Vroom, vroom. Pamela Anderson sits atop a motorcycle at Highline Stages in New York's Chelsea neighborhood, where, minutes earlier, she effortlessly mounted the Bonneville T-120 in her voluminous purple dress. Evoking classic Hollywood bombshells, think Marilyn Monroe or Jane Mansfield over her Baywatch persona, she seems to be slipping into a character on this sunny afternoon in mid-May, mock-revving the throttle as a production team figures out the best placement for a fan to blow her hair. Several minutes later, Liam Neeson enters the stage, decked out in black leather, ready to hop onto a bike of his own, but pump the brakes. This is a cover shoot for their upcoming movie, The Naked Gun, so in the grand tradition of the spoof comedy franchise's countless sight gags, the acting legend gets a tiny, bright pink bicycle adorned with pink and silver handlebar fringe, and of course, a dainty dinging bell. The two are filling big shoes once occupied by Leslie Nielsen and Priscilla Presley across three movies, 1988's The Naked Gun from the files of Police Squad, 1991's The Naked Gun 2.5, The Smell of Fear, and 1994's Naked Gun 33 1/3, The Final Insult. Some 30 years after that third installment, Neeson plays Los Angeles Police Squad Detective Frank Drebin Jr., son of the bumbling lieutenant made famous by Nielsen. The gruff, no-nonsense Neeson, an Oscar nominee for Schindler's List and star of the Taken and Star Wars franchises, among his 100-plus movie credits, isn't an obvious choice to lead a comedy chock-full of puns, misunderstood questions, double entendres, shenanigans, and slapstick moments. Producer Seth MacFarlane admits to Entertainment Weekly that the wild idea for Neeson to star in a reboot was his, and not because the actors' names are so comically similar. No, MacFarlane's inspiration struck after working with the Irish actor on Ted 2. Liam Neeson is probably the only actor alive in the 21st century who could do what Leslie Nielsen did, largely because that kind of actor is not something that we're really generating a lot of in Hollywood anymore, MacFarlane says, likening his star to Robert Mitchum, Gregory Peck, and Charlton Heston. He's larger than life on screen, and yet so honest. Two things that don't always mesh, but he's really able to be that kind of on-camera powerhouse. Being funny, per se, isn't actually what's required of Neeson as Frank Drebin, the character created by brothers David and Jerry Zucker and Jim Abrams, collectively known as Zaz, that's Z-A-Z, for the 1982 ABC comedy series Police Squad, also starring Nielsen, which was canceled after just 6 episodes. That's not to say that Neeson isn't funny. He really is a silly guy, Pamela Anderson tells Entertainment Weekly of her co-star a few weeks after the cover shoot, laughing, "He acts like a silly little boy sometimes." In addition to Ted 2 and other collaborations with MacFarlane, like A Million Ways to Die in the West, The Orville, and a couple episodes of Family Guy, Neeson appeared on 2 episodes of the Northern Ireland-set comedy series Derry Girls and, perhaps most notably, 1 episode of Life's Too Short, created by and starring Ricky Gervais, Stephen Merchant, and Warwick Davis. "I'm a funny guy, aren't I?" he insists to the trio on a 2011 episode of the BBC and HBO-produced series, playing himself. "I'm funny, right?" Here, though, the jokes aren't played for laughs, but delivered with sincere earnestness. One of the cardinal rules for the Zucker brothers was that you don't cast comedians, MacFarlane explains. You cast serious, dramatic actors, preferably with a ton of gravitas, which Liam has in bountiful levels. Neeson recalls taking an immediate liking to the idea of starring in a Naked Gun reboot. Not because I think I'm funny, far from it, but I did enjoy those Leslie Nielsen films a lot. He describes those movies as a great giggle in the late 80s, very early 90s, especially while going through a rough period in his life at that time while living in London. Still, he was a little reticent. I thought, can I pull this off? The fact that it was Seth's idea, I thought, well, maybe he sees something in me. So did Paramount. This isn't the first time someone has attempted to reboot the famed franchise. In December 2013, the studio announced that one led by The Hangover and Office star Ed Helms was in development, with Reno 911 creators Thomas Lennon and Robert Ben Garant writing. In a 2015 interview, David Zucker said he was offered a producer role but declined. In 2017, he revealed that he and Pat Proft, a writer on the original Naked Gun trilogy as well as the Scary Movie films that Zucker directed, were working on a new script for the fourth Naked Gun. Those, of course, ultimately went the way of so many ideas in Hollywood, but Paramount saw something in McFarlane's vision. The Liam-Seth combination, they got it immediately, says McFarlane's producing partner, Erica Huggins. I think that is a tribute to all the executives that had seen all the iterations that had come before this, that this was the premier idea to try and reboot this particular franchise. It wasn't a hard sell. But Akiva Schaffer, one-third of the Emmy-winning Lonely Island comedy trio, along with Andy Samberg and Jorma Taccone, admits there was definitely trepidation when Huggins started discussions with him to direct. He didn't want to be the person to ruin it, after all. I would consider the first Naked Gun kind of a perfect movie, he says, during a break while working on the film sound mix at Paramount Studios in Los Angeles. So perfect that his initial thought was that a reboot of the storied franchise was a very bad idea. The general rule is, if you're going to pick up an old property, the better ones to do are the ones that you're switching the genre, he explains, like 21 Jump Street, where it was kind of a cheesy TV show drama and now you make it a comedy. But the next sentence, after asking if he wanted to make the movie, was, Liam Neeson is interested. That changed everything. No one can be Leslie Nielsen, and Liam Neeson is not Leslie Nielsen, but Liam is his own person with his own particular set of skills. So it just opened the world of possibility to me, Schaffer recalls. The Right Stuff. The original Naked Gun was inspired by 1950s and 60s television. M-Squad, Dragnet, that kind of thing, Schaffer says, as well as 1970s movie influences such as Charles Bronson's Telephone and the Dirty Harry movies, and even 1973's The Day of the Jackal. But in the 35 years since, we have lots of new, fresh genre references in the world of detective procedural and action films and TV to spoof, Schaffer notes. For example, the NCIS and Law and Order franchises, the world of John Wick, Mission Impossible Fallout, the James Bond movies, and even Neeson's own Taken and its sequels. There's just endless things. So when I thought of it as Liam doing that, not trying to do what they did, but taking the spirit and trying to honor the style of those movies comedically without stealing outright as much as possible, that's what opened it up, Schaffer says, and I started to see what the movie could be. A relief for McFarlane. Prior to hiring Schaffer, who wrote the new Naked Gun script with his Chippendale Rescue Rangers scribes, Dan Greger and Doug Mand, the producer had worked with a couple of other writers on his attempt to find the right way in. We had actually broken a story, but it really was feeling, even to us, like a cover band version of the original movie, and we couldn't really justify in our own minds why this needed to be made, McFarlane admits. Akiva and his team came up with a completely different take, and it just felt a lot fresher and a lot more worthy of shooting. He cracked the nut in a way we couldn't. It helped that Schaefer really studied the first movie. I watched it over and over to try to figure out the magic trick of it, he says, while also turning to others, including Zsasz's Top Secret and Airplane, Abrams' Hot Shots, Mel Brooks's Blazing Saddles, and Austin Powers. Christopher Nolan's The Dark Knight serves as a vibe influence for the opening set piece. That's a bank heist featuring Neeson in a schoolgirl uniform, more on that later, as well as countless detective movies, including Double Indemnity and The Big Sleep. In the spirit of the original movie, Schaefer's film follows Frank Jr. as he and his partner, Captain Ed Hocken Jr., played by Paul Walter Hauser, yep, son of George Kennedy's famed sidekick, are investigating the death of tech programmer Simon Davenport, who drove his car off a Los Angeles mountain. Was it an accident? Did he take his own life? Was he killed? He worked for Eden Tech, and its owner, Richard Kane, played by Danny Houston, has nefarious intentions with his Project Inferno. Once implemented via a PLOT device, he can instantly flip the switch on humans' brains, causing their behavior to revert to an animalistic fight-to-survive response. I played into the archetype that I felt was required for this particular film and style and relished that, says Houston, who recently shared the screen with Neeson in the 2022 neo-noir crime thriller Marlowe. Here, Houston confirms he was inspired by some real people for his character, some of which I think I'll keep to myself, he adds with a smirk. The actor also pulled from classic movies, including Peter Sellers and Stanley Kubrick's Dr. Strangelove. There's something delightful about wanting to have ambitions on such a global scale, which turns it slightly political, Houston says, but it's all very much with a good heart, I think. The whole film has a kind of heart to it, however irreverent, occasionally, we want to be. Police aren't the only ones curious about the circumstances around Simon's death. So is his sister, Beth. Enter Anderson, who steps into the femme fatale role previously filled by Presley, whose character Jane Spencer eventually married Nielsen's Frank Drabin and had a baby with him at the end of the third movie. Neeson is not the grown version of that child. Frank Jr., though, was a passing mention at the end of Naked Gun 2.5 in a speech Frank delivers with President George H.W. Bush and First Lady Barbara Bush at his side. We were seeing lots of different people, Schaefer says, of casting Anderson as Beth. Finding the right leading woman was really tricky, he continues. Like Frank, they needed to be someone with dramatic chops who could play it straight, but also clueless and with charm and pizzazz. Turning up the heat. After a handful of auditions, something Anderson has never done as far as she can recall, and Zoom meetings with Schaefer, the recent Last Showgirl star, won the role. Schaefer says it came down to two or three others by the end, but she also credits her chemistry with Neeson. I wanted to bring to the character some vulnerability and sincerity. It's really easy to play way over the top, and it's good to have some groundedness when there's this comedy happening. So that was a challenge, Anderson says. You have to kind of jump off the deep end together. We're going to be silly, but you have to remain a true character, so it's a dance. And of course, it does take two to tango. Initially, Frank is closed off to the thought of love, but Beth opens his eyes and heart to new possibilities. Like Frank with Beth, Neeson wasn't sure what to expect from Anderson. She embraced and embodied the silliness, the quirkiness, and the intensity, and a little sad quality in her too, which was adorable, Neeson says of her take on the character. She's got that feistiness and innate sense of humor, and very easy on the eyes, too. Naked Gun is the next step in this new era of Anderson's unexpected career. She filmed the comedy before audiences ever saw The Last Showgirl, for which she earned Golden Globe and Screen Actors Guild Awards nominations, as well as Rosebush Pruning with Elle Fanning, Riley Keough, and Callum Turner. Since then, she's also shot Place to Be opposite Ellen Burstyn, whom she calls my hero. This Entertainment Weekly interview is the last thing on her itinerary before she jumps into rehearsals to play Marguerite in a revival of Tennessee Williams' Camino Real at this summer's Williamstown Theater Festival. After that production, she'll shoot the Sally Potter film Alma in London with Dakota Fanning and then Michael Cera's feature directorial debut. This, the 58-year-old says, is not retirement as she thought she'd be living at this point in her life. I was a little bit disappointed in myself a few years back when I thought, I guess that's all there is, she admits. I feel like I had so much more to give, but I really have never been an ambitious person and have always listened to what's going on around me. But after I played Roxy Hart in Chicago on Broadway in 2022, I thought, okay, from Baywatch to Broadway, I can live with that. I'll go into my garden and I'll make pickles and jams and I'll help my elderly parents and that's okay. This is still a beautiful life. As she did in Chicago, Anderson gets to show off her singing chops in Naked Gun, but swap the show tunes for jazz scat. As Beth becomes more involved in the search for her brother's killer, she helps Frank infiltrate Kane's club, distracting the tech billionaire with a number, Sassafras Chicken Indeed, she requests of the band, and make it extra lumpy. As witness to the performance, Houston was utterly spellbound by Anderson. When she hit the stage with this jazz number, which was quite complicated and kind of mathematical, I was, yeah, smitten, he admits. Anderson, who was in her school's jazz band, thinks her impromptu scat during one of her auditions is what helped her land the role. I did my 8th grade scat for Akiva and he's like, okay, you got the job, she recalls with a laugh. Ed Schaefer, I think that might have been true. Prepping for her big Naked Gun moment, though, was daunting. I was like, how am I going to remember this? It's an absolutely nutty scat solo. But I did, and I sing it all the time. Just walking around the house, I can't get it out of my head. She also had to confront nerves about working with her legendary co-star, whom she was terrified to meet. He squashed her fears, though, on their first day of rehearsal. It's like walking on stage, the butterflies you get. Once you're on stage, then you feel safe and you feel free, she says. But it's the anticipation of meeting somebody, isn't it? It's the hardest part. Neeson has previously declared himself to be madly in love with her, though seemingly platonic, as he also declared himself done with dating. And she previously told Entertainment Weekly their relationship stayed professionally romantic during filming, where she says she learned so much from him. I think I have a friend forever in Liam, and we definitely have a connection that is very sincere, very loving, and he's a good guy, she says, adding her admiration for his body of work. He's a true artist. He comes from theater in Schindler's List and has done over 100 films. And I did things inside out and backwards, came from television, and then my personal life kind of overshadowed my professional life. It is funny. We all come to this place in different ways, but to be able to share this experience with him is very meaningful and such an honor. An experience that, for all of his acting expertise, had Neeson questioning his craft. He was acting really humble and nervous to do comedy, Housley recalls. We all knew he could do it, but he kept just being like, I really hope I'm doing this right. Taken, the funny road. Despite popping in on a couple of comedy series, even hosting Saturday Night Live in 2004, just before The Lonely Island started working there in 2005, Neeson knew an 85-minute movie was a different ballgame than a small TV appearance. During the whole shoot, I'm being very honest, I still did not know when we wrapped at the end of each working day whether it was working for me. Pamela, Paul, Danny, and everybody else I thought were very funny. I just couldn't put a verdict on myself, on my own performance. I'd always ask Akiva, are you sure it's working? That continued from day one till we finished. Not only was it working, but he was contributing in significant ways to some of the movie's most hilarious gags. Case in point, the teaser trailer that made a splash in early April featuring Neeson in a schoolgirl uniform. Behind the scenes, Schaefer recalls people wondering if Neeson would don the outfit. Neeson, he said, insisted on wearing it. The things you might think were more difficult to talk him into were the things he was leaning into. He was fully ready to get the silliness in. And as Neeson recalls, it was his suggestion that the skirt should be a little bit shorter. Funnier, he thought, if his underwear had an unexpected design on it. My schoolgirl underpants? They're strawberries, he says proudly. If that bank robbery fight scene performed in a short skirt wasn't enough, the cherry on top was the teaser's final joke. In the police department's Hall of Legends, the crying men kneel before photos of those who came before, some of whom were their fathers. The last image is of Detective Norberg, played in the first three movies by O.J. Simpson. The officer we see looking at his photo is not crying, however, and is quick to shake his head, confirming Norberg is not his dad. Nor, seemingly, will this movie pay any kind of tribute to the late football star-turned-actor acquitted of double homicide. The first time I would tell my friend, hey, I'm thinking of writing this thing, they go, what are you going to do about O.J.? So we had to answer the O.J. question, Schaefer explains of that quick nod. It tickled a lot of funny bones, Neeson says of the trailer. I wasn't interested in hearing numbers and blah, blah, blah. I'm just not on any social media sites or anything like that. But I got the sense, my wonderful PR lady said, this has played really, really well. So well that Hauser got a surprising amount of text messages, phone calls, and emails from people reacting to the first look. There was a really weird emotional reaction people were having because of how those films fit into their childhood. Clearly, there's a desire for this. McFarlane, for once, is encouraged by the positive response. The environment that we're living in, I think, certainly helps. It's been a long time since a really high-profile hard comedy has been put out there, he says. This is a true comedy with a whole bunch of laughs, and I think that's something that's a little rare right now. And hopefully, if the movie does well, it brings a few more of those kinds of movies back into our shared landscape. Like, perhaps a sequel? Anderson is ready to carry on the tradition of the original trilogy, which proved to be quite lucrative for the time. Each movie opened at number one and combined earned almost $217 million at the domestic box office. I've already told them I want to do it, she says, without hesitation. Liam said he'll do it if I do it. People have to love it, though. Like another scene for this cover shoot, the two can't seem to escape each other. This brings back memories, Pamela, Neeson tells her as the production team ties them up in a rope. Just imagine, this could be you and Paul Walter Hauser, she replies. Next time. That's the article about The Naked Gun. Law and Disorder, The Naked Gun's Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson on Unloading the Silly for their reboot. That was by Jared Hall. And already we're halfway through our time for the show this week. You're listening to Entertainment Weekly, and I'm reading from their website, which is EW.com. The other article I have ties nicely with the movie that came out last week, Fantastic Four, starring Pedro Pascal. Here we are ranking Pedro Pascal's best movies and TV shows from Materialists to The Mandalorian. As the Emmy-nominated actor dominates pop culture, Entertainment Weekly breaks down his greatest work to date. This is by Ilana Gordon and Kevin Jacobson. After years and years of toiling away in support roles, Pedro Pascal has become one of the rare actors to explode in popularity at middle age. It all started to really happen for him after being cast in two massively popular sci-fi series, The Mandalorian and The Last of Us, at the same time, which helped put him on the path toward becoming a dominant presence in film, television, and meme culture. Thus far, 2025 has been a stellar year for Pascal, starting with season 2 of The Last of Us, and extending through his starring roles in multiple acclaimed movies such as The Materialists and Eddington. He is also taking to the skies as Reed Richards in Marvel's The Fantastic Four: First Steps, which may only further cement his status as one of the hottest actors working today. With a resume that spans nearly two decades and includes some of the best fantasy, reality, and meta-comedy in recent memory, here are the 15 best Pedro Pascal movies and TV shows ranked. Of 15, the 15th is The Equalizer 2 in 2018. The Equalizer films are like if Liam Neeson in Taken accepted freelance clients. In this sequel, Denzel Washington is back as Robert McCall, a former CIA assassin who, in the first movie, began a casual friendship with a teenage sex worker, inciting a war with the Russian mafia. 4 years later, The Equalizer 2 sees McCall using his unique skill set to help others, including his former Defense Intelligence Agency colleague Susan Plummer, played by Melissa Leo, a vigilante action movie that casts Pascal in the role of McCall's former partner, Dave York. The Equalizer 2 also features Ashton Sanders and Bill Pullman, and includes at least one death by harpoon. We can watch The Equalizer 2 on Netflix. Number 14 is The Mentalist, seasons 6 and 7, and that's dated for 2014. Pascal's career really took off in 2014 with recurring roles on Game of Thrones, Graceland, and The Mentalist. The latter pairs a psychic named Patrick Jane, played by Simon Baker, with California investigative officer Teresa Lisbon, played by Robin Tunney, as they get inside the heads of their suspects to help solve murder cases. Pascal's character, Agent Marcus Pike, arrives during season 6 of the show's 7-season run, intended as a romantic foil to help interrupt the will-they-or-won't-they dynamic occurring between Teresa and Patrick. Marcus's chemistry with Teresa is arguably helped by Pascal's off-screen friendship with Tunney, and their 7-episode arc on the show is a good one for mentalist devotees to revisit, or for newbies to check out. We can watch The Mentalist on Hulu. Number 13 is Wonder Woman 1984, and that's from 2020. Patty Jenkins' Wonder Woman delighted audiences when it debuted in the summer of 2017, while Wonder Woman 1984, released the first Christmas of the COVID-19 pandemic, is an ambitious sequel that struggles to measure up. Set at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C., the film introduces a new set of antagonists, including Barbara Minerva, played by Kristen Wiig, and Max Lord, played by Pedro Pascal, whose seemingly simple wishes set the world on a collision course toward chaos. At nearly 2.5 hours long, 1984 doesn't fly by, but Pascal excels in his role as a local TV salesman whose infomercials promise viewers everything you've always wanted. As Entertainment Weekly's critic describes him, he's a boxy-suited Ponzi schemer slicker than the product he peddles. We can watch Wonder Woman 1984 on HBO Max. Number 12, The Good Wife, Seasons 1 and 2. That ran 2009 to 2011. As of late, Pedro Pascal's career is a study in physical, fantastical projects, most of which require him to talk low and aim precisely. So it's interesting to note that his first major recurring television role took place on the talkie CBS legal drama, The Good Wife. Set in Chicago, the series follows Alicia Florrick, played by Juliana Margulies, the wife of the Cook County State's attorney who re-enters the workforce and resumes her duties as a litigator after her husband, played by Chris Noth, is arrested for a public political sex scandal. Pascal plays Nathan Landry, an assistant state attorney, keeping Alicia's husband behind bars, appearing in 6 episodes during the serialized show's critically acclaimed first 2 seasons. Also starring Josh Charles and Christine Baranski, The Good Wife represents some of the best network television of the early 2000s. It has received Pascal's stamp of approval, too, as the actor says he kept watching even after his arc on the series ended. We can watch The Good Wife on Paramount Plus. Next, it's Triple Frontier from 2019. A lot of the best Pedro Pascal movies and TV shows involve some amount of sparring with dangerous cartel folk, and this heist film keeps that tradition alive. An action-adventure flick directed by J.C. Chander for Netflix, Triple Frontier follows a group of former special ops soldiers who, feeling financially undervalued for their years spent in military service, decide to get what's rightfully theirs by robbing a drug lord. Chander brought in the big guns to play his team of military men, enlisting an ensemble composed of Ben Affleck, Oscar Isaac, Charlie Hunnam, Garrett Hedlund, and, of course, Pascal, this time playing a pilot dubbed Catfish. It's a good old-fashioned male bonding film with a lot of money on the line. As Entertainment Weekly's critic writes, "There may be no honor among thieves, but Triple Frontier certainly makes watching them pretty entertaining." We can watch Triple Frontier on Netflix. Number 10 is Prospect from 2018. The two areas Pedro Pascal excels in, acting while wearing helmets and becoming a surrogate parent to abandoned youth. In the 2018 sci-fi thriller Prospect, he gets to do both. Damon, played by Jay Duplass, and C, played by Sophie Thatcher, are a father-daughter team with a contract to extract gems from a forest covered in poisonous mushrooms. But what could have been a nice bonding trip to an alien moon turns ugly after a violent interaction with a pair of rival prospectors. Pascal plays Ezra, the verbal member of the duo, whose swagger and cowboy cadence are a surefire signifier of impending shootouts. A stylish, low-budget indie film that's smart enough to cast great actors and get out of their way, Prospect doesn't need multi-million-dollar special effects to keep you entertained. Ezra's accent is capable of handling that all on its own. We can watch Prospect on Hulu. Narcos is from 2015 to 2017. Many of Pedro Pascal's best movies and TV shows reside in fantasy worlds, that is until we arrive at Netflix's Narcos. A serialized crime drama, Narcos follows the rise and fall of Colombian kingpin Pablo Escobar, played by Wagner Moura, whose aptitude for cocaine distribution transformed him into a billionaire. Pascal stars as real-life DEA agent Javier Peña, who, along with his partner, Agent Steve Murphy, played by Boyd Holbrook, is tasked with bringing down Escobar, the Medellin cartel, and later the Cali Cartel. During the show's 3-season arc, viewers get a crash course in the creation and growth of the cocaine cartels that dominated the 80s, representing one of Netflix's premium series and serving a surprising amount of humor amongst the history and violence. Narcos offers a front-row look at Pascal's acting talents. We can watch Narcos on Netflix. Number 8 is Game of Thrones from 2014. A thing about HBO. It owns Sunday nights. A prime example is Game of Thrones, which captivated viewers from the moment it premiered in April 2011. When Pedro Pascal showed up in season 4 to flirt and fight his way through Westeros as Oberyn Martell, it was obvious his career would vault to another level. Arriving in King's Landing to represent Dorne at King Joffrey's wedding, the Red Viper spends his 7-episode arc charming his paramours with bon mots like, "When it comes to war, I fight for Dorne. When it comes to love, I don't choose sides." Boasting a healthy hatred toward the Lannisters and managing to piss off or poison almost everyone he comes into contact with, Oberyn's departure from the series remains one of the show's most visceral moments. But during his brief tenure, Pascal is dynamic, channeling a man whose appetites vacillate between control and impulsivity, charisma and combat. Game of Thrones may have struggled at the end, but season 4 is considered one of its best, and some of that acclaim belongs to Oberyn's storyline and Pascal's performance. We can watch Game of Thrones on HBO Max. Number 7 is The Materialists from 2025, this year. After years spent as stoic heroes and intriguing side characters in action and sci-fi projects, Materialists allowed Pascal to showcase a different aspect of his range. The romantic dramedy from writer-director Celine Song stars Dakota Johnson as Lucy, a Manhattan matchmaker who finds herself charmed by Pascal's Harry, a debonair, uber-rich partner at a private equity firm. Drawn in by his high-class lifestyle, Lucy also begins to reconnect with her working-class ex-boyfriend, played by Chris Evans, forcing her to reassess her values. Harry checks every box for Lucy. He's charming, thoughtful, and wealthy, but as the film explores, she begins to realize that something is missing between them, which gives her pause. Pascal is well suited for the role, subtly inhabiting the kind of man who seems like the total package on paper. One revelation late in the third act regarding Harry proves divisive for some audiences, but the overall film makes us hope for more Pascal as a rom-com leading man in the future. We can watch Materialists on Amazon Prime Video to rent. Number 6 is Gladiator 2 from 2024. Gladiator from 2000 was led by then-emerging stars like Russell Crowe and Joaquin Phoenix, with legends such as Oliver Reed filling out the cast. Ridley Scott's sequel to his Best Picture winner employs that same methodology, casting buzzworthy stars like Paul Mescal, Joseph Quinn, and Pascal, with Denzel Washington as the respected veteran. Hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Set 16 years after the original, Gladiator 2 follows Hanno, played by Mescal, a prisoner of war with a secret past who fights in the gladiator ring on behalf of Washington's scheming Macrinus, a former enslaved man hoping to overthrow Rome's twin emperors. Pascal plays Marcus Acacius, a Roman general who becomes morally conflicted about his allegiance to the emperors. Tapping into his trademark emotional restraint, the actor provides solid grounding in a film populated with more theatrical performances. We can watch Gladiator 2 on Paramount Plus. Eddington is also from this year, 2025. Few of us want to revisit the dark days of 2020 when the COVID pandemic confined us to our homes. This, plus escalating racial tensions following the tragic death of George Floyd and the looming presidential election, made for difficult times. But Ari Aster, writer-director of Hereditary in 2018, Midsommar in 2019, and Beau is Afraid in 2023, is certainly unafraid of dark, difficult material, as demonstrated by this satirical neo-Western about a small New Mexico town descending into chaos amid the various conflicts of that fateful year. Joaquin Phoenix stars as the local sheriff who becomes increasingly frustrated by the mayor's, played by Pascal's, enforcement of mask mandates and decides to challenge him in the upcoming mayoral election. Pascal is exceedingly well cast as the liberal-minded politician whose outward friendliness conceals self-interested motivations. While his performance isn't as flashy as Phoenix's, whose character becomes increasingly unhinged as the film goes on, Pascal brings an X-factor charisma that plays well to his strengths as an actor. Eddington is not yet available to stream or rent. Number 4, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent from 2022. Nicolas Cage has enjoyed a long, illustrious career. Who else has the range to do Moonstruck from 1987, Gone in 60 Seconds in 2000, and Pig in 2021? But in this meta-action comedy, Cage assumes his most difficult role yet, himself. In The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, Cage plays a struggling Nicolas Cage who quits acting and accepts a $1 million offer to be the guest of honor at billionaire Javi Gutierrez's, that's Pascal's, birthday. What began as a job transforms into a friendship, but when the FBI tips Cage off that his new pal might be an arms dealer who kidnapped a politician's daughter, he agrees to assist with their investigation. Pascal is, frankly, adorable as a Nicolas Cage superfan. In another actor's hands, Javi's obsession with and devotion to Cage and his work might read as creepy, but Pedro plays the role earnestly while still offering up enough edge to make the audience concerned for Cage's safety. Also starring Tiffany Haddish, Ike Barinholtz, and Neil Patrick Harris, Unbearable Weight is a surreal comedy that measures equal parts silly and sweet, but it's Pascal's performance that has everyone wondering whether Javi is as good an actor as his hero. We can watch The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent on Amazon Prime Video to rent. Here we are, the top three, the Fantastic Four first steps from this year. While Pascal is no stranger to leading major sci-fi and fantasy franchises, The Mandalorian and The Last of Us, or the superhero genre in general, like Wonder Woman 1984, The Fantastic Four First Steps does mark new territory for the actor. The Fantastic Four is Pascal's significant venture into the Marvel Cinematic Universe, as well as his first feature film with top billing. As Reed Richards in Mr. Fantastic, the elastic-limbed scientist who serves as the titular superhero team's leader, Pascal brings a pragmatic level-headedness that suits the character well. Reed may not be the most animated member of the team, but his steady hand is crucial to their success as he tries to find a solution for how to protect Earth from a cosmic being hell-bent on destroying the planet. As Entertainment Weekly's critic writes, Pascal at last gets a superb filmic vehicle for his charms, one that allows him to exude both his classic movie star swagger and his more modern sensitivity, which simmers beneath the surface every moment he's on screen. The Fantastic Four First Steps is not yet available to stream or rent. Number two is The Mandalorian from 2019 to 2023. It takes a serious actor to be able to emote through a helmet, but Pedro Pascal is up for the challenge. On The Mandalorian, the first live-action Star Wars television series to stream on Disney+, Pascal appears as the titular character, a bounty hunter hired to retrieve an infant named Grogu, aka Baby Yoda, only to develop a love for the child and bail on his imperial assignment in order to protect him. Straddling the line between space cop, mercenary, and reluctant father, Pascal spends most of the first season fighting for money while also battling his feelings of attachment for this vulnerable new dependent. A space western that thematically explores fatherhood in ways not previously seen in the Star Wars canon, The Mandalorian is one of many projects in which Pascal gets to show off his paternal side, but his performance here deserves a special shout-out. Only an actor of his stature could avoid being constantly upstaged by Grogu, the cutest being in the history of the Star Wars universe. We can watch The Mandalorian on Disney+. And our number one item, our number one show, The Last of Us, 2023 to present. Should you ever need to navigate a post-apocalyptic world inhabited by undead, cannibalistic humans infected with a mutant fungus, you'd be wise to team up with Pedro Pascal's character in The Last of Us. Adapted from the beloved PlayStation video game franchise, Pascal plays Joel, a smuggler and survivor whose life changes after he agrees to transport a teenager believed to be immune to the virus, played by Bella Ramsey, also of Game of Thrones glory, across the country in search of a cure. Co-written by Craig Mazin from Chernobyl and Neil Druckmann from the game's co-creator, The Last of Us is a perfect showcase for Pascal's signature gruff charm and air of danger. Entertainment Weekly's TV critic writes that he brings a lightness to gory trauma, aging himself with unkempt gray fuzz, mumbling an I reckon Texas twang, he looks like he would be really bummed about killing you. We can watch The Last of Us on HBO Max. And that's our list. We just ranked Pedro Pascal's best movies and TV shows from Materialists to The Mandalorian. It was by Elena Gordon and Kevin Jacobson. I did say those two articles would take up most of the show, but I do have a little time here. So let's hear how Adam Scott is recalling college friend Paul Rudd getting suddenly famous. It was so crazy. The Parks and Rec alum also revealed he once auditioned for a role in Clueless. This is by Emlyn Travis. Adam Scott is sharing what it's really like to watch one of your besties become suddenly famous overnight. The Severance star opened up about personally witnessing his college pal Paul Rudd's sudden rise to fame following the release of the 1995 film Clueless, during a recent episode of Entertainment Weekly's The Awardist podcast. When Paul got that job, that's when everything changed, and one of my friends was suddenly famous, Scott recalled. It was so crazy. Yeah, and that was 30 years ago, too. Earlier in the conversation, Scott revealed that he and Rudd first met because they had attended the same university. I started at the American Academy of Dramatic Arts the year after he graduated, and already he was kind of famous on campus, he explained. I got to school, and there was chatter about this guy, Paul Rudd, and part of it was because he had already gotten a Nintendo commercial that was airing, and it was like, whoa. From that point on, Scott noted that it was clear to everyone on campus that Rudd was a star and was going to explode at some point. However, the pair didn't actually meet until Scott's graduation, years later. He was there, giving out an award as the past star of the school, he said, and so we hung out after the graduation and became fast friends. And Somehow they've managed to successfully escape auditioning for the same roles along the way. I remember I auditioned for Clueless, but not for the role Paul played, Scott elaborated. I auditioned for some other role. Rudd's performance as Josh in Clueless opposite Alicia Silverstone is widely considered to be his breakout role. Following the film's release, he would go on to star in Baz Luhrmann's 1996 film adaptation of Romeo and Juliet, the 1997 drama The Locusts, and the 1998 romantic comedy The Object of My Affection opposite Jennifer Aniston. Scott, on the other hand, got his start on popular 90s programs like ER, Boy Meets World, and Party of Five. He is perhaps best known, however, for his roles in films like Step Brothers and shows like Parks and Rec and Severance, the latter of which saw him earn a nomination for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Drama Series at the 2025 Emmys. Rudd and Scott have also gone on to share the screen together in recent years, starring in the 2011 comedy Our Idiot Brother, as well as on Parks and Rec. We can listen to Scott's full awardist interview that's linked in the article. That was Adam Scott recalling college friend Paul Rudd getting suddenly famous. It was so crazy. It was by Emlyn Travis. And that wraps us up for our time today for Entertainment Weekly. I'm volunteer reader Diane Salisbury. I've been reading from Entertainment Weekly's website, which is EW.com. And you are listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona. I know I ask this every week, but please come back next week to hear what I found from Entertainment Weekly's website. Until then, thanks for listening. Goodbye.